next argument is in Appeal Number 07-1005, Eurodif SA v. United States. Ms. McCarthy, good morning. Welcome to you. Please proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This is a very narrow but very important appeal. Under the Supreme Court's decision of Vermont Yankee, 435 U.S. at 524, pursuant to the Supreme Court's language, commerce should enjoy wide discretion.
Ms. McCarthy, I read the briefs very carefully. I don't find it at all helpful to have generalizations about broad discretion at the Commerce Department. The holding of the three-judge panel of the Trade Court was that that the statute governing administrative reviews can't apply in this case. So it's not a matter of discretion or options available to Commerce, at least in the view of the decision we're reviewing. They said there was no option available because the language of the statute precluded it. So quoting broad generalizations out of Vermont Yankee doesn't respond to the rationale of the court below.
With respect, Your Honor, the three-judge panel was deciding an interlocutory appeal of four certified questions. And the question at issue that's germane here is the question as to whether a SWU contract provides for the sale of goods or the provision of services. The court held, under certain criteria, based on the contracts, on the record of that investigation, that the contracts in those cases were substantially identical to the contracts that the court considered in Florida Light and Power, and that therefore there was a provision of services and not subject to the anti-dumping law. We accept that. For purposes of this appeal, we fully accept that holding. The issue is we did not read anything in this court's decision to mandate how Commerce is to administer the anti-dumping law following
The court below held, I think, that Congress has already made the decision and that a scope review or a scope inquiry is a possible way to test whether a future shipment of uranium would fit under the decisions finding no duties applicable. It seems to me you have to address the statute. You can't get by simply arguing about the details of the contracts in those cases.
Your Honor, with all due respect to the Court of National Trade, the use of the scope inquiry is utterly futile in this context. Under the plain
language, you say that over and over in your brief. It's not at all clear to me that it's true. As I understand it, you have a year before liquidation to begin with, and it can be extended further by the Secretary of Commerce in certain exigent circumstances. So why it would be futile, if there's some reason to suspect that a particular shipment represented to have been under a service contract actually wasn't a service contract, is a lie, that it actually was a goods contract, a normal sale of a physical item, then you have a year before the liquidation has to occur. And even if the year passes and you haven't been able to finish showing the fraud, the fraud statute has no limitation period. So I don't see how the government is left in a position where it's futile if they're being ripped off. It doesn't look futile at all to me.
Your Honor, because the scope inquiry will be initiated following the entry of the that the scope inquiry will be applied prospectively. It will not be able to suspend the actual entry being liquidated.
You already have a year, do you not?
But it won't be suspended, Your Honor.
It won't need to be suspended.
It won't be able to capture. It will not capture the prior entry. It will only be a specific determination regarding an entry that will not be subject to the scope inquiry. It will not be subject to suspension under the plain language of the regulation. It is forward-looking. The suspension cannot occur until on or after the date of initiation of the scope inquiry. The scope inquiry will be initiated, as Eurodif admits and it's brief, but will be initiated after the entry. The only way you can get suspension of entries at the time of entry is through an administrative review. And we read nothing in this court's decision to suggest that an administrative review would be precluded. Using the certification process imposed by the Court of International Trade allows the importer to basically opt out of the whole entire anti-dumping law. Customs, as this court recognized in Erickson, is not responsible for scope, the administration of scope inquiries, scope determinations. Customs law would be subject to entirely different standards. Furthermore, this is a complex issue involving legal facts, legal application of facts.
I'm just trying to understand the portion of your argument that says it would be futile. It would never work. It couldn't work. I'm not with you yet. I don't see why it couldn't ever work.
Because we're doing it. Scope inquiries are supposed to make generalized application. Is this product within or without the scope? And future entries will know that this product is within or without the scope. We're talking about a case-by-case analysis of an entry. Is this contract actually a SWU contract? Did the transactions actually reflect? Did the performance of the contract actually occur? This is a fact-specific inquiry.
Well, I understand that. I understand it's fact-specific, but I don't understand why it would be futile.
Because entry X will occur on January. Commerce initiates a scope inquiry in March. It decides that entry X is, say, without the scope. It can't suspend entry X because the entry has not been suspended. It can only be suspended at the time of entry if Commerce has administrative review. As this court repeatedly observed, administrative reviews are retrospective. A scope inquiry is not retrospective. The regulation clearly provides that the suspension occurs at the date of initiation, which means that it's already too late. The scope inquiry will never be able to capture that prior entry back. So we could say, we have a scope inquiry
let me ask you a hypothetical, because I'm not getting any progress here. I'm not getting any traction. If I enter a shipload of uranium that's been enriched in France, and I'm the importer, and I tell Customs or Commerce or other agents of the government, this was produced under a service contract. Here's the contract. You can see yourself, clause 407 makes it clear that it was for service, not goods. Now, so far, what's the problem for the government?
The problem is we don't know what the parties actually followed the terms of that provision. The other thing about this, with this three-judge panel,
if the contract says that I'm buying the service of enrichment for $1 million a pound, What more is there to determine?
What about if in reality they didn't follow the terms of the contract and they had another transaction?
Well, why do you care? I suppose that they only got paid half that much. What does that matter to the government?
Because if in reality, pursuant to this court's three-judge panel decision, the interlocutory decision, if in fact title did transfer, if in fact there was an indicia of sale, then if there was a transfer in title, in reality,
That sounds like a case of outright fraud, that the contract that's for services wasn't the real deal. The real deal was a secret deal for the sale of physical items. And then the fraud statute would apply, wouldn't it?
It may not be fraud.
How could it not be fraud? If I import it and I tell the government it's a service contract, here's the contract, but that's not the contract we actually followed. The contract we actually followed, not being disclosed to the government, later turns out to be a contract for goods. I don't see how there can be any conclusion except that it's fraud. It's probably criminal fraud as well as civil fraud, so the government is not without remedy.
These are complex arrangements. They may in good faith believe that there wasn't a sale, but once Commerce really should have the discretion to decide this, once they look at the facts, then they may well be be services, but they may be a deviation such that there would have been a transfer of title. This court's three-judge opinion looked at the contracts on the record of the investigation and simply made an analogy to the contracts that were at issue in Florida Light and Power. It did not, we cannot speculate as to what future transactions are going to look like, what future contracts are going to look like. A future contract may look substantially different from Florida Light and Power, but Commerce needs to have a mechanism to examine that, and Commerce is in charge of administering the anti-dumping law and making scope determinations, as this court held in Erickson. I see I've exceeded my time. Thank you.
I guess we have next Mr. Hochberg.
Yes, may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal, Your Honor. I will ultimately address the question you've raised with the government, but let me tell you about the two issues that we're raising on appeal. Contrary to the concerns of our opponents, we're not trying to undermine or reopen the three-judge panel decision. We're trying to get it clarified with regard to two factual situations that we believe, if present, render the imports not sales of services, but sales of goods. The first is whether or not the natural uranium component, the raw materials, were sold to the U.S. utility purchaser by an affiliate of the enricher, the French enricher. The scope amendment that Commerce adopted in the second remand determination made clear that if the enricher
Where did that uranium come from? From the utility?
The uranium, if it was sold by an affiliate of the foreign enricher, it would have come from the mines of the enricher, of the affiliate. That is, maybe in another country.
So it never came from the affiliate?
No, we're arguing that if the affiliate sold to the utility the natural uranium, indeed there's some reason to think there might even be integrated offers, so that they would combine the two in some way, that in that circumstance, that is not what the Federal Circuit panel conceived of as a sale of services. It didn't address that issue, and we're asking the court to clarify that if, in fact, there is that kind of integrated transaction.
If a utility sends uranium, unenriched uranium, to the enricher, and who enriches it and sends it back, the enricher has performed a service.
That is what the court held, yes.
That's the prior
case. We're not disputing that. If the utility
now you've
that,
got the affiliate thrown in, and you're arguing a sale between the affiliate and the enricher.
No, sale between the affiliate and the utility. The affiliate of the enricher, they're combined parties, they negotiate a combined arrangement that says to the U.S. utility, we'll sell you the natural uranium.
So you're saying the affiliate sells to the
U.S. utility.
Utility.
And that's the uranium.
And where does the uranium come from before it got to the affiliate?
What country?
No, what party?
The utility.
Did it come from the utility?
Yeah, no, from the affiliate. The affiliate would have...
Where did the affiliate get it from?
It was a miner. The affiliate is a company that mines uranium.
In other words, it never came from the...
It was never in the physical
never
possession
came
of the
from the utility.
No, it was never in the physical possession of the utility. But we agree that if the utility goes to a third party source for the uranium and then supplies that uranium to the enricher, then under the panel's decision, that's a sale of a service.
But Mr. Hochberg, this is a hypothetical. It's a hypothetical case. It's not the facts of this case. There are no facts in this case that show that an affiliate
is
involved.
No, what is happening now is if you reject the government's appeal, then the scope exception that Commerce adopted will apply to all future imports. And what we're saying is, since that will be the governing rule for all future imports, that Commerce ought to have the discretion if, in fact, in a future import, there was a negotiated deal where there was an interlinked transaction.
Are you asking
that is not a pure sale of services.
Are you asking for an advisory opinion then? Are you asking for an advisory opinion?
No, we're asking you to interpret the Federal Circuit panel's decision as applied to the scope exemption that the Commerce Department came up with pursuant to the second remand.
For the purpose of future cases, if they arise.
Well, it's trying to define the meaning of what the Federal Circuit said was the sale of services. For instance, in our second example, the second concern we have is what if the utility never delivers uranium to the enricher? The contract says it should. It never does. The fiction that the enricher is performing a service on the customer's raw materials is evaporated. It's not even a fiction, because in fact, if the natural uranium isn't delivered until after the LEU is produced and imported, there is no possible fiction that the enricher was performing a service.
I think we understand that, Mr. Hochberg, but just to follow up on Judge Lurie's question, but those facts don't exist in this case. What you're arguing is that this should be set up so that it doesn't happen in the future.
We're concerned that the scope exclusion, which was adopted by Commerce in its remand determination after the CIT rejected the approach that Ms. McCarthy was saying should be adopted, that they're defining what is outside the scope of the dumping law and dumping order. And we're saying they shouldn't exclude the kinds of transactions where there might be interlinked sales of uranium and enrichment.
But if you and if your client and the government both say they're not resisting the result in this specific case, where exactly is our jurisdiction to hear this appeal about what ought to be?
Because you are now reviewing the order, the scope exception, scope exclusion that Commerce developed pursuant to the remand that this court sent back to the CIT. This court sent back to the CIT and said, you've got to exclude sales pursuant to service transactions. So Commerce had a struggle with what is a sale pursuant to a service transaction that meets the court's criteria. And we believe the two issues we have raised are consistent with the court's criteria and should be reflected in the scope exclusion that the Commerce Department adopted. If it doesn't, then there may be no ability for the Commerce Department in a future interlinked transaction to be able to say, no, wait a second, that's not within the scope exclusion. And so that's why we're raising that issue. Let me just say, I'd like to reserve, I have 1 minute left, I'd like to reserve that for rebuttal. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Rosen, I think we're hearing next from you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, this is the fourth time that the SWU import issue has come before this court, and this court has properly determined that SWU imports are outside the countervailing duty law as well as the dumping law.
So we have a perfect record.
We believe so, Your Honor. Given that the dumping statute operates only with respect to subject merchandise, and that this court has determined that SWU imports are outside the scope of the law, those imports are not subject merchandise.
Well, Mr. Rosen, I understand the government to be saying, well, that's fine if they're truly SWU imports, but maybe there'll be some transactions in the future that wouldn't be legitimate SWU imports, or there would be fraud. And we, the government, have to be able to investigate that and make that determination, and the only way we can do that is through an administrative review.
If I might, Your Honor, the SWU certification procedure that was established by the Commerce Department for this case was determined by the department to be sufficient to enable Customs to determine at the time of entry whether, in fact, there was a SWU import. It is a certification that is more rigorous than anything I have ever seen from the government. It requires a copy of the SWU order and the SWU contract. It requires a documentation of the amount of feed delivered by the utility and that the utility has title to the feed delivered. It requires the quantity of LEU produced pursuant to the SWU order and that the order and that the production conforms.
But the argument the government makes in its brief is, well, it might be a lie. All those documents might be a lie, and we should be able to investigate and determine whether it's truthful or not.
I have two responses to that, at least. Number one, it would require the lie of the importer. But most importantly here, the certification requires the signature of the purchaser, the utility as well. So you've got another party on the hook, which is far different from virtually any certification case.
Does the certification require any kind of disclosure or any sort of, does it ask the questions that would permit a determination as to whether in fact the affiliate owned the uranium and another affiliate enriched it?
The certification requires a statement by the importer and by the purchaser that the feed was owned by the utility, not by the affiliate.
That gets us into when it owns the feed and so forth, because there's a whole timing issue in this case that we haven't really talked about.
Right. The certification does not go into the original source of the feed, which is irrelevant under the Uradeef decision.
So an affiliate of the enricher could in fact have provided the uranium or title to the uranium to the utility.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And that would, in your view, that would still be a SWU contract.
Absolutely, okay. Your Honor. And even in this investigation, from the outset of the investigation, our clients disclosed that in certain instances, an affiliate had sold feed to certain of its customers. And Commerce, in analyzing the transactions, treated the transactions as SWU transactions. The original source of the feed is not relevant under the Uradeef decision. Once the utility purchases the feed, it can use it in a particular enrichment transaction. It can sell it, it can swap it, it can hold it in inventory. It's not connected to the enrichment transaction.
So if, just for the sake of the argument, one company owns the uranium and is the enricher, and sells the uranium to the utility sort of as a sale and lease back. You hold this while we're enriching it with the other hand, does the enrichment, and then sells it back. That's a valid SWU contract under the anti-dumping law, in your view.
I'd have to go through the facts a little more closely, but it sounds like that was a linked transaction where the feed was being sold for the particular enrichment transaction.
And therefore it would be a sale of goods and not services?
That could be a sale of goods, and in fact during the investigation there was a contract where both the feed and the enrichment and the SWUs were provided by our clients, and that was treated as the sale of LEU, not the sale of SWU, because they were related.
And how does Customs sort out the difference between a linked transaction and a not linked transaction at the border?
In the documentation, the SWU contract is presented. Well, first I would say that Commerce itself regarded the prior ownership of the feed as irrelevant. Commerce rejected USAC's request that an additional requirement be engrafted upon the exclusion to focus on the original source of the feed. But the contract, the certification documents require that the contract be performed in accordance with its terms, and if any other fee was involved, that fee be disclosed to Commerce.
So it sounds like you're saying that the existing certification and other procedures already can discriminate between a legitimate work unit service versus a sale of uranium where title passes.
I believe so, Your Honor, and I believe that that's exactly what Commerce said. It said that the certification procedure it had devised was sufficient to enable Customs to determine at the time of entry that this was a SWU transaction.
Well, but Ms. McCarthy argues that what actually occurred might be different from what the contract called for, and that Commerce needs the time and mechanisms to look behind the surface of the transaction to be sure that the terms as set forth in the contract are what actually occurred.
First of all, Your Honor, the SWU transaction is virtually completed at the time of entry. Unlike the typical scope exclusion situation where some future act is required to determine whether in fact the exclusion is appropriate. Indeed, in this case, Commerce fashioned an exclusion for imports of LEU for purposes of conversion and fabrication and re-export within 18 months. Those imports are not subjected to administrative review or suspension of liquidation. It's by no means certain that the import will be in fact fabricated or in fact re-exported within 18 months. There are a host of cases where an exclusion is based on future use, whether it's an electronics item, photographic paper, wire rods, polyvinyl.
Well, I didn't understand her to be arguing about future events. I understood her to be suggesting something about past events, that namely, there was actually a sale of a physical object, even though the papers that accompanied the entry said it was a service contract.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think you put your finger on it. Where you have the certification of the importer as well as the utility that this is a SWU transaction, you'd be looking at fraud in that circumstance. Moreover,
argues, if I understand it correctly, that unless an administrative review is permitted, there will be no practical way that Commerce could look behind the certification papers to see if fraud was being committed in a way that could result in duties being imposed where fraud was in fact found.
Well, that, as you noted, that's what a scope proceeding could do, and Commerce's regulations indicate that those proceedings should take 120 days, well before the normal one-year period for liquidation, which in any event can be extended, and if fraud or negligence is involved, the statutes allow customs to reach back with respect to entries. There are also criminal penalties that are applicable here.
Her argument seems to be dependent on the idea that certification isn't enough, fear and incentives aren't enough, that there also needs to be an opportunity to investigate whether the true facts correspond to the contract and the other certification documents.
And our point, Your Honor, is why here? Why here with respect to this fight we've been having for 6.5 years, where this court has spoken clearly and definitively that SWU imports are outside the scope of the law?
But she's not challenging that. She's
right.
Saying legitimate SWU transactions don't get duties, but if they're phony, they should be subject to verification, and then if shown to be phony, there should be duties.
We agree that phony transactions should not
be. But she says she can't get there without the administrative review, that the scope review won't suffice.
She is seeking a procedure in this case, after all we've been through, that differs from Commerce's routine practice in a host of cases and in this case, and this in the face of decisions which say that SWU imports are not subject to the law. All we are asking for is equal and non-discriminatory treatment. Not an opportunity
compared to whom?
To evade the
compared
law.
To whom?
Compared to Commerce's routine application of the anti-dumping statute in in the electronics cases, in the photo paper cases, in the wire rod cases, in the polyvinyl alcohol cases, in live swine cases. All of those cases operated with or without certifications and without conducting administrative reviews and requiring suspension of liquidation. That's all we want.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Fisher?
Good morning, Your Honors. I would just like to address a couple of points. First, Commerce must be required to treat this Court's decisions as binding. And second, Commerce cannot continue to impose...
The first proposition is not in doubt. You don't need to spend any time on that.
Well, I would be surprised that below Commerce has said repeatedly at the agency level and at the Court of International Trade that this Court's decision in Nerdiff is not binding on it. And we want to make sure that the Court makes very clear to Commerce that it cannot continue to flaunt this Court's decisions and must apply them in the circumstances where they are applicable.
Well, I don't understand what you're asking for. Some kind of advisory ruling that if a certain thing happens in the future that the law will be X?
No, just merely that this Court's decision is a stare decisis and must be applied by Commerce.
Well, that's already in the law. That isn't so because we would say it's so in this opinion. That's already in the law.
I agree, and one would hope...
Well, then what is it you're asking us to do?
You've spent half your time on a non-issue.
Okay, Your Honor, thank you. I will proceed. The other claims that have been addressed by Commerce that somehow that the parties would enter into sham transactions and try to evade the procedures set up for the certification. There are certainly there's a long history of utilities contracting for enrichment services, separately contracting for uranium feed with various suppliers. There are multiple suppliers around the world. It's the utilities who decide what feed goes with what services contract and at what point in time. The kind of situations that the government and USEC are raising are claims of circumvention. There are circumvention procedures. This court and the Court of International Trade has dealt with circumvention cases, and polyvinyl alcohol is a perfect example where parties restructured the transactions to try to get around the scope of an order. In this case, Commerce has remedies to deal with those kinds of situations. It does not require the burden of ongoing administrative reviews where the ongoing suspension of liquidation and the chilling effect on the utility's ability to enter into non-subject SWU contracts would be impaired on an ongoing basis, and that's something that the court needs to take into account, and the statute, of course, does not permit
Commerce
to impose those restrictions.
Thank you. Ms. McCarthy, you have some rebuttal time, or if it's actually, yeah, you do.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very briefly, these are very complicated transactions. They're not black and white. We're actually not talking about sham transactions. Our concern is a good faith belief on the part of the importer and an erroneous certification in good faith. That would escape the application of civil penalty statutes, because we would have to show it negligence, gross negligence, or fraud, just even to recover the duties under 19 U.S.C. 1592d. We have to establish a violation of the statute. They could, in good faith, consistent with the legislative history of the MOD Act, get an opinion by the attorney. This is a SWU contract. They, in fact, may be wrong. They may, in fact, once Commerce looks at the record, they may, in fact, ban a transfer of ownership, consistent with this court's three-judge opinion. We're simply asking for some workable, administrable mechanism by which we can ensure that there's not importers opting out of the anti-dumping law. Whatever decision Commerce makes will be subject to administrative review and judicial review by the Court of International Trade or by this court if necessary. The certification procedure is subject to no review, except for the extreme cases of fraud. Meanwhile, a lot of anti-dumping duties are escaping payment.
All right. Thank you. Thank all four attorneys. We take the appeal under advisement. You have a minute, you thought?
You
have...
Thank you, Judge.
I think you have 1 minute.
I just want to address one point, and maybe I think it's an important one. Mr. Rosen said to you, why is this case different from the other cases? Let me tell you why it's different. This is the first time that courts have held that how one structures a transaction affects whether or not the anti-dumping law applies. That has very profound implications. And so it is...
Well, what's your point? This panel can't re-decide what the prior panels held.
No, I agree with that. But with regard to what the government is arguing and what we have suggested as the need for a procedure to ensure that entries aren't liquidated before the Commerce Department has a chance to review it, the issues of whether or not a transaction involves a service transaction under the panel's decision is a complicated one. It's not like all the other cases where it's a question of the size of the import, whether the shape of the import, the ultimate use of the import. Those issues can be determined by customs because they're easily factually determined questions. This case raises for the first time, when you reread the decision of the panel, you will appreciate what was the panel thinking about the outer limits of what's a service transaction here and where does this become a goods transaction. And what we're saying is that is the kind of determination when you're applying it to specific transactions and specific imports that commerce needs an opportunity to review. It's not a question of believing that.
All right, I think we have your point, and your time has expired.
Thank you.
We'll take the appeal under advisement.